Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Spoiler warning, this is your official Mission Zach's Leguizamarama spoiler warning.
Peace. I hate the word.
I got trust, I got one leg and a bucket of chicken.
Yeah, pretty little cornstarch on my werewolf, man.
Luigi Mario.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, or welcome for the first time if you've never listened to our podcast before. Might I recommend Whispers in the Dark? We are a podcast where each week us two fucks get together and have a chat about something John Leguizamo has done. And you know what? This week is no exception. We're doing that exact thing. I'm Mish. You might know me from in 1989. I was one. I was living the dream in Hobart, Tasmania, in a rental property next door to a milk bar. I'm joined, as always, by my friend Zachary Thomas Ruane, who you might know from.
Being zero years old, being in my mother's womb in 1989. I was born in the last 15 days of the 80s.
Sounds warm. So
I never knew a world without Tim Burton's Batman.
Wow. Do you know that I don't know a world without The Simpsons? Neither do you.
Same.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
Do you know that there are 18-year-olds, there are legal adults that can drive and drink, not at the same time, and only drive in the US, but there are legal adults that don't know a world without 9/11?
That's insane. I saw a meme the other day that said something like 1980 is as far away from 1939 as it is to 2021.
I was like, whoa. And then I realized, like, I wasn't alive in 80, so, like, that's not too much. But, yeah, it's pretty crazy. I think the crazy thing for me, right, is, like, to an 18-year-old now, they view 9/11, like we view the fall of the Berlin Wall or Tiananmen Square, like those are just things that had happened, that have happened. Like they're just things that are part of history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like they, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And then I was just about to say, and they've never had anything like game-changing, and then I remembered we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Do you remember when you could smoke durries in a pub?
No, I missed that.
Okay.
I missed that. I remember pubs still smelling like durry. Does that make sense? Like by the time I was 18, that it was still in the carpet from, you know what I mean? It was only a couple of years old that they'd changed the
rules.
And it was still a bit clunky as well where you went to smoke.
You could smoke at the front of cafes. Like
crazy.
I remember these times. Might come as a big shock to everyone, but I've smoked a durry or two in my time. And let me tell you, I remember I was 19 years old when the no smoking inside rules hit Melbourne, Victoria.
So it would have just happened then, like because I'm only a year or so younger than you.
Yeah.
So literally I would have missed it by maybe 6 months, a year. Yeah.
100%. I was at an indie club on High Street in Melbourne CBD with some friends of mine who also frequented the durry.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a countdown at midnight to everyone having their last smoke. So at 11:55, like the DJ was like, "Hey, everybody." Because that was the
DJ. So are you serious? You literally like were on the dance floor with a durry in your mouth?
Yep.
That is fucking insane.
Isn't that crazy? But like I also remember when those rules came in. Keep in mind I was a dumb 19-year-old.
Yeah,
but I remember when those rules came in, my friends and I were like, that's some bullshit. That's fucked. Like, where is our freedom? Where's our voice? And there was a countdown at 11:55 and everyone lit their last ciggy. And we all dance to, I don't know, Hello, Goodbye or some, the presets, so I don't know.
Yeah.
And then after at 11, at 12:01, everyone went outside to light their first outdoor ciggy.
I think that, like, smoking outside, I don't smoke, right, but I have occasionally taking a drag of a pal's durry.
Oh, this is fun. Do you, here's a fun memory of Zach and Mish. I think I can share this. We were young enough. We were like, you know.
Yeah, well, it depends on what it is. If it's about smoking, sure. Don't smoke, kids. If you're a kid and you're listening, don't smoke.
Smoking's gross.
It's foul.
But when we were young, Zach and I had this tradition. Whenever we went to any form of live gig or music festival, We would share a cigarette together at some point in the thing. Yeah, it was real cute.
Imagine that pre-COVID. Like, could you imagine sharing a cigarette now with, like, someone? I wouldn't, because I'd be afraid of getting COVID.
Here's a fun thing. F. Scott Fitzgerald, who's a famous man who wrote The Great Gatsby, he wrote in one of his fucking books that I think it's The Great Gatsby.
Man, if you'd cut everything after F. Scott Fitzgerald, you would have sounded so smart. If you just said, you know, F. Scott Fitzgerald once said, da 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 da. But then you're like, but he's the famous man who wrote that book. It's like, none of us here have read anything more than The Great Gatsby, but you could have really played it, honey.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm giving you advice. I don't know. I would have said the same thing. I would have been like, I would have done exactly the same thing.
Anyway,
I would have, like, gone on a tangent talking about Baz Luhrmann and how I just didn't like it. Interesting choices.
I did not like the modern remake. I think Robert Redford was the perfect Gatsby.
I've not seen that one.
Oh, it's the perfect Gatsby. My mum, growing up, my mum had the biggest crush on Robert Redford, and I was like, yuck, he's old. And as I get older, I'm like, I get it. Robert Redford's a fucking hottie. Well, do you know what?
If you ever have a kid, you'll say the same thing about Brad Pitt. Because I remember when Brad Pitt and Robert Redford were in a movie together, and it was just like, this is the same level of attractive, just 30 years difference, 40 years difference. So you'll say that one day to a young person, you'll go, oh, Brad Pitt, and they'll go, no, he's an old man. And you're like,
oh, my God, how dare you. Anyway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, the Gatsby guy, he once said that the most intimate thing two people can do is share the last cigarette.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Isn't that nice?
But it's gross. There's a problem with the media is it makes cigarettes like cigarettes are so – cigarettes are like film language. Mm. I was thinking about this the other day, right? This is a bit of a wanky tangent.
Go on.
We should have like a little sound or an alarm. Like
the sound of someone
Zach's
fapping.
Wanky tangent. Fap, fap, fap. It's a Zach wanky tangent.
Tom, write that
down.
No,
I was thinking about I was thinking about masks, right? And I was thinking, I watched Hacks on Stan or HBO Max if you're in the United States of America. Have you seen Hacks yet?
No.
Oh, man, you'll love it. Like, great.
It looks up my street.
So up your street. Really fun. It took me a minute. It was more sitcom-y than I was – not sitcom-y. It was more like comedic than I was expecting at the start. And then it went as dramatic as I was hoping. It's really beautiful. I loved it, right? And it was really great as well because both characters were super three-dimensional. Usually in that sort of story, I feel like the young character is like – right on and gets it and is perfect. And then it's like, this old person's stupid. And then it's like, actually, they're not so bad. but actually both characters are really flawed and they come to each other. It's really beautiful, like, character piece. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is I found out they filmed it during COVID. And then I found out White Lotus, which I watched recently, was filmed during COVID. And I was like, isn't that odd? And I have friends' things that have been filmed during COVID. It's like, isn't that odd that during COVID we have to do all this stuff to shoot something where you're pretending that it's not COVID? Like all this effort to make it look like it's pre-COVID. And then when I watch it,
post-COVID, I kind of flip out when they're not wearing a mask outside. Like, I kind of find it weird that they're not.
Would they have had to have locked down for like 14 days before filming and stuff? They had to do that with Love Island.
This is America, baby.
Oh, yeah.
In, bang, like, bang, bang.
In Love Island UK, everyone who was involved in Love Island UK, as well as the Great British Bake Off, they all had to go into quarantine for 14 days before filming. That's how badly those people wanted to do Love Island.
I they did that on what's that one with Tim Gunn and Heidi Klum?
Project Runway.
On Amazon? No, it's a different one. It's a new one.
Oh, my God.
It's
how good is Tim Gunn?
It's the new Tim Gunn one, and he's not a judge. He's, like, just a guide, and he, like, floats about and gives advice.
Is it a fashion one?
Yeah, it's... Mish! Honey! What am I doing, recommending, like, scripted comedy dramas to you, man? No, this is, like, where it's at. It's an Amazon one. It's called Making the Cut, and it is just literally...
Even the title, I think I've had dreams about this.
Full rip of
Project Runway,
which I haven't watched, but I know that it's a rip off of Project Runway because of the bits of RuPaul that are a bit of a rip off of Project Runway. It's the same as that. But the whole thing is, it's the most vertically integrated show ever because it's like it's an Amazon show, and the prize is they get their clothes listed on Amazon, on the Amazon store.
Oh, that's so funny.
And Heidi Klum is like, I have a lot of respect for models ever since the model reality show. America's Next Top Model, right? I have a lot of respect for models. I think models have a really hard job, but they're not fashion designers. They're models.
Yes.
But like Heidi Klum is like so opinionated, and she'll just be like, I don't like it. And it's like, and then this fashion designer's there, they're like, oh, I think it's good. And she's like, nope, I wouldn't wear it. And it's like, okay, like, that's okay. But I know you know a lot about fashion because you've worked in the industry for a long time, but like, you don't know it. Like, that's not your job. You don't make jackets, Heidi. Yeah. So what are you talking about?
I have to watch this show. I was obsessed with Project Runway for a while. And she wasn't so much a judge as much as she was the host of that show.
Right. So this is what's so crazy, because she's a judge. I think it's Heidi Klum. Is it Seals X?
Yeah, Heidi Klum.
So this is what's amazing, right? She's a judge on this, and Tim Gunn is now the host.
Oh, delicious.
And he goes around and, like, gives advice, and he's real like, oh, what are you doing there with that jacket? And they're like...
Oh, that was a good Tim Gunn.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. No, I lost it. Tim Gunn, I don't know what you're doing with the orange. I just...
Oh, Zach, that's very good.
I'm working on it. I'm not working on it. That's the first time I've ever done it.
I'll work on my Heidi, and you can work on your Tim Gunn.
We should do that. We should do the one sketch we ever make. The one Mission Zach sketch is Mish is Heidi Klum and V is Tim Gunn. And I'm just like, I love it all. I think it's all great, but I just... Why the orange? I don't see how orange fits in with this.
I like orange. I wore orange last year at the GLAAD Films Festival Awards and I loved it. So I think you should go with the orange.
That's great. That's so good.
Oh, fuck.
That show's great. And then Naomi Campbell's in season one. But season two, right, they film in COVID. And like, it's so weird because they mention it at the top. They're like, we are in a bubble in Miami. We're not going around the world like last season. We're in a bubble in, like, just out of LA. And then they social distance. They make a point of it. And I was like, why did you make a point of it? Because then every single scene afterwards, they're all up in each other's grill.
That was like MasterChef Australia. They were all standing next to each other. They were all, like, shuffling around. But then when it came to, like, they weren't allowed to hug. So they all just hit each other's elbows. It's like you were both just breathing 2 centimetres from the same plate trying to get microherbs placed accurately. And yet when that person's going home, you just nudge them on the elbow because you're not allowed to touch them. So odd.
That's so funny. So strange.
That's going to be a great little doco. In about 5 or 6 years' time, where they get a bunch of footage from television shows and movies that were made during this pandemic period and like highlight all the things.
It's the really far apart that like just cracks me up. It's the social distancing that's really fucking awkward.
When you know they all get on a bus after to get to the next location or like.
Have you seen the Kelly Clarkson, Vin Diesel's performance on the Kelly Clarkson show?
No.
Look, do yourself a favor, Google that. It's a short video on Twitter. It is of everything that's ever happened. It's like the most phenomenal thing. I think I'll just recommend it to you and to the listener.
I'm writing it down right now.
Yeah. It's so strange. I don't know if I can describe it too much, but basically Kelly Clarkson is in the studio. She introduces it. It is Kelly Clarkson. She has a morning show. Yeah. She introduces it. Then it's, so what it is they're just playing a track from the CD. So it's just like, so they're just playing a pre-recorded track and they will occasionally cut to a shot of the CD cover of Vin Diesel's face. And then the audience is people sitting at home dancing to Vin Diesel. I cannot convey to you. And then it's just there. But what it is it's like screens in where the audience would be. There's these like LED, like there's this like these like TV screens.
Ellen
vertical.
Does them too.
Right, Ellen does it. So there's just this clip on the internet, which is just videos of people at home dancing to a pre-recording of Vin Diesel singing. And it's just like, this is not right. You guys haven't worked out you haven't solved this.
Oh, that's so funny.
But this is what I was going to say.
Those screens that are the size of people.
Yeah. So,
and they've got them set up behind the chairs, like in front of the chairs. Oh, my God. It's
amazing.
So
and it's
odd.
A pre-recording of Vin Diesel.
That's so
phenomenal.
Odd.
It's just like one of those beautiful encapsulations of the moment.
Mm.
But this is the thing I was going to say about masks, right? So I was like, that's weird. But then I thought, I don't think we've developed a filmic language around masks yet.
Mm.
Does this make sense? Like, I'll go back to cigarettes. When someone's smoking a cigarette, it can mean a million different things. It's not just someone smoking a cigarette. It can be sexy. It can be, like, scary. It can mean, like, a million things. There's a filmic language around a character smoking a cigarette. And in most film and TV, like, we don't know where we're going to land. And, like, I think that the first few films where they put masks on people are going to be super clunky.
Mm.
But there's if it's normal now, it has to happen. Like eventually we're going to see masks on characters when they jump into the elevator, when they go outside. Like that's going to fold into film and TV. But like how it's done and how it can be done in a way that isn't self-conscious is really like interesting. Because what does a mask mean? What does it say? And
I've never thought about that, Zach. That's very, very... That's astute as fuck. Look at you go.
I was like, I don't want to be the guy that like in Auntie Donna, we filmed a few like lo-fi things and we were outside so we happened to wear masks. But I was like, but a scripted, considered, on a set thing, like it for me already it's feeling weird if you're choosing not to put your character in a mask, but it's also going to feel very self-conscious the other way around because it sets it.
Has
it
there
puts
been
it in
any?
The time
has
and place.
There been any fictional television shows where they've had people in masks wandering about?
I think some TV, like some network TV shows may have done it. But it's like, I guess what it does, right, the reason you can't do it straight up is it puts it in a time and a place.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, exactly.
You know, like I was watching Succession the other night and it's like this could be set anywhere from like 2000 to now. Like it's set any time or place.
It's exactly like in any kind of late 90s thriller when someone pulls out their cell phone and it's like, oh, and you're instantly out of it. Like it's just like, oh, this is from the 90s.
It's like there was a guy I remember when, you know, Hello by Hello from the other side.
Yeah, Adele.
Adele.
What was her name?
That was what was her name?
What was her name? She's one of the biggest pop stars of 2021. What was her name? She's not dead, Zach.
Which one was she? Yeah, but she hasn't. She's not in an album cycle, so you know, it's as good as dead for a pop artist. But that, remember there was, she had like a flip phone. She had an old phone in that music video and everyone was like ragging on it. And then the director was saying, he was like, the reason I use flip phones is because, he was like, I don't like to use iPhones because it dates what you're doing.
Yes.
He's like, if you put an iPhone in their hand, like, it's like, bam, that's 2018. Mm. That's an old iPhone. Whereas if you make the choice to put something older in their hand, it's like, it makes it a little more ambiguous.
Who's the guy who wrote Minority Report?
I don't know who wrote it, but Steven Spielberg directed it. No. Oh, Philip K. Dick.
Yeah,
wrote
Dick.
The short story.
Dick. That's all I could remember from high school. It was like, Dick, man. Apparently, in a lot of his stories and stuff, he predicted a bunch of technology changes because he wrote all those stories in like the 50s and 60s or whatever. And he predicted all these big, big technology, like photocopying and like advanced computers and shit. But there's this really interesting part in Minority Report where the protagonist needs
in
to...
In the film or the in the film?
The book.
Oh, the book, right.
Where he needs to photo... I might be like, I don't know, fucking with this a bit, but he needs to fax something. So this is like prediction into the future. You can fax. It's like, I need to send it straight away. So he grabs his piece of paper and another carbon piece of paper and puts it into a typewriter. It's very interesting.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's like the
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The film is phenomenal. I think about the film every couple of weeks, and like, because apparently Spielberg got a group of futurists together and like did like a 2-week camp where they produced a document and they said, all right, this is what we think the world will look like.
Spielberg loved a fucking camp. That'll come up because it's actually relating to war films, which we will be talking about, and I'll talk about
that. Yeah, for sure.
Sorry, keep going. That was rude of me.
No, but he did this thing where he, I don't know if it was a camp. I might have just been thinking of Saving Private Ryan. But he got a bunch, he probably just got them into the office. But he got a bunch of futurists together and they did this document, and it is phenomenal. You go back and watch that film and it is like so on the money. Like it's, you know, the hand, I think I've talked about this on this podcast, but like the way that, like, you know, we use a mobile phone now is literally what Tom Cruise does in that film. Like, it's all hand.
I need to watch that movie again, actually. I feel like this podcast is just a series of you telling me about something and me being like, I've got to watch that again.
Yeah, but then you'll always throw something back at me and then I'm like, oh, yeah, I haven't seen that either. It's great. But that's what I was. But the one thing is, there's one moment in it where he then is like, oh my God, I have to get this information. And rather than like upload it to Dropbox, he like has to put it on a little USB stick. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. You didn't get everything, Spielberg.
You missed that one, didn't you, Dick?
Yeah, you missed out on dickhead. You missed out on
what a loser.
Dropbox,
what a fucking loser. Should we talk about casualties of war?
Yes, we should.
I think it's time.
It's blurb time to talk about
me, bitch.
Well, I just copy pasted this one.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
That's not like you at all.
No, sometimes I add a little bit of something, something.
Well, you might be able to find some flair as you go. You're a professional.
I don't think so. I think I don't want to add flair to this film. So Casualties of War is a 1989 American war drama film directed by Brian De Palma and written by David Rabe, based primarily on an article written by Daniel Lang for The New Yorker in 1969, which was later published as a book. The film stars Michael J. Fox and Sean Penn and is based on the events of the 1966 incident on Hill 192 during the Vietnam War. John Leguizamo plays Private First Class Antonio Diaz.
Good.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it on the description.
I will say this. I'd never seen this film. I remember the poster. Like, I remember the poster for this film at my local Blockbuster when I was growing up or some bullshit.
Right.
So I remember the cover, and I remember when we first got the idea of doing John Leguizamo, when we were going through the films, I was like, oh, I've heard of that one, but having not known much about it. I will say that I was in the mood last night. I've had a bit of a war film moment the last few weeks. I've watched a couple. I've watched Saving Private Ryan. I watched Hacksaw Ridge. Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Hacksaw Ridge is a really interesting one.
Yeah. And so I was like, fucking.
Oh, we'll talk about Hacksaw. Let's talk about war films. Mm. Let's get to that, because Hacksaw Ridge is a really fascinating one.
Yeah. And so I was like, fucking let's hit a trio of war films, chucked it in. It isn't what I thought it was going to be. It was a very different kind of film, a lot more drama. It was a lot more intense than I was expecting the film to be, especially a 1989 war film. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We asked John Leguizamo, or Mish did, because she's abusing this.
Why haven't we spoken about this? This was huge.
Because he responds quite a bit, Mish.
No, but this one was like, this is the fourth time or something he's made contact
Mish,
with
I think you are, look, you're precariously close to overusing this privilege. This
no, I'm not. I think he loves it, although he's nearly at 1 million followers. And when that happens, I think we're just going to, I want him to follow us.
I want to get him on Monday.
Yeah, but I think the next step is following us. I think I'm going to put in a request.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to put in a request. I'm going to be like, John, could you please follow us? We're big fans. We do a podcast about you.
Then it puts him in a weird position. I don't love that. Because what if he doesn't want to follow us? I don't think it
does. He does. He does want to. Of course he does. Of course he fucking does.
But he chose this movie. What did you ask him? You asked him Casualties of War or...
Or Ride Along.
Now, what's Ride Along?
Ride Along is a Kevin Hart film.
Oh, fun. That's a very big, question of him.
Like, because it would have completely, I was like, which one? They're different. And he just wrote back, Casualties, of course. Like, I'm a dumb fuck. I instantly felt like a fucking loser because he went, Casualties, of course. But I'm sure he was probably just like, Casualties, of course. But I was like, oh, he hates
really?
Me.
I read it as Casualties, of course. Mm. I'm proud of that film. I did a great job in it. I'm a fantastic actor.
His first film.
Was it?
Yes. It was also John C. Reilly's. Let's just take a moment to discuss the cast of this fucking film. The director of this movie, did he know when he was casting this film that he was just going to be casting a bunch of people that in 30 years' time would be huge?
Iconic. It's an amazing cast, John C. Reilly is phenomenal, and he's very good in this film.
He's so skinny.
As is John. What's that?
John C. Reilly's so skinny in this film.
Yeah.
He's a little Lankatron. He's this little 20-year-old. Oh, it was just great. Every time I saw a new face, I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It's a fantastic cast. It's so good. So John Leguizamo's in it. John C. Reilly's in it. Michael J. Fox is fantastic in it. Mm. Sean Penn is acting a lot, but he's very good in it. We should say, if you've seen this film, we had a chat before it. I don't think we're going to delve too deep into the themes of the film. It is a heavy, heavy, heavy film. And we have a lot of thoughts on it. And I'm sure you want to hear them, but it's just too heavy and we're over Zoom. So I think we've just we're just going to talk to the film generally and everything. But I think, I've been reading a fair bit about it before we launched into it. I've been reading different think pieces about it and reading about the story. I think that's where to go. If you've seen this film, go online, read about it, because I don't think there's anything we can add to the story itself. But
heads up, if you haven't seen it and you're thinking of watching it, it's heavy.
It's heavy.
It's one of the most confronting mainstream films I think I've ever seen.
I would say it's the most confronting in that we've watched so far, for sure. And what I was saying before about how it's not what I thought it was going to be, is exactly what Zach was just saying then. It isn't just a kind of like, you know, guns out, got to save the boys war film from the late 80s.
Yes, yeah.
It's heavy. I kind of wish I'd had the warning that this was quite a heavy film before I'd seen it. So take that as you will from us, that it is quite heavy if you are wanting to watch it.
But it's, if you're, just know how heavy it is and be in the right headspace. It's very effective and it's very powerful and, you know, we can talk about it. Like, I've not seen much by Brian De Palma. He's a bit of a gap, like as a lot of things are, but I haven't seen a huge amount by Brian De Palma, but he is, I was very surprised. When I read the synopsis of what this was about and then I saw that it was him, I was like, whoa, he doesn't seem like the right filmmaker to be tackling these topics and this subject matter. And with him, you can sort of be oscillating. But look, it's very well done. It's very well done. And how sensitively handled it is I'll leave to smarter reviewers than me and everything. Just be warned.
Yeah.
But you were talking, Mish, about war movies.
And
Hacksaw Ridge.
So I didn't mean to, but during this little lockdown period that we are currently in, I found myself on a little corner of war films. And by little, I mean
amazing.
Very small. But oh, yeah.
It's amazing the corners you find yourself in. I was talking to you last podcast, I think, about how, you know, I was saying this movie is full on. I watched a significantly more full on 3-hour documentary called "The Act of Killing" about 3 weeks ago. But there's something about I don't know. There are times you oscillate. I feel like you oscillate in lockdown between I want to watch Making the Cut and I want to see the worst of humanity in high art.
Yeah. I watched Saving Private Ryan and I had never seen Saving Private Ryan
except never seen it
when I was really young, when it first came out. So, and when it first came out, I didn't get it or whatever because I was quite young. And so my partner and I watched Saving Private Ryan. I really enjoyed it. And then the next day I was like, I'm in a war film. I'm going to watch Hacksaw Ridge because I'd never seen it. That was an interesting film. But then also 2 weeks ago I watched Full Metal Jacket and then I also watched Pearl Harbor, which arguably...
Whoa. You have... there is... I feel whiplash from that list. I feel whiplash.
Why?
Just from
that's pretty full
on. From the best to the trashiest.
Yeah.
I watched Saving Private Ryan, and my God, that the first 20 minutes of that film, I think, is, you know, it's hard to really see now how powerful that was because of so many things rip it off. But I mean, that was groundbreaking in its depiction of war. And then the next day, I watched Hacksaw Ridge, which says it's about nonviolence, but what?
Yeah.
And then I watched Full Metal Jacket, which, I mean, people talk about the war, but it's actually the first hour before the war shows the dehumanization of soldiers. And then I watched Pearl Harbor and Kate Beckinsale, Ben Affleck, they get it.
And then I watched Pearl Harbor and that Ben Affleck, what a hottie.
How good is Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, it's pretty fucked,
the
eh?
The thing I love about Pearl Harbor is that Pearl Harbor isn't the end of the movie. It happens halfway and then they're like, and now we got to get revenge for Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, no. It's so strange. Pearl Harbor is so odd.
It's such a funny thing.
It's not good.
Like, because it's Titanic. Titanic yes, happened yes. 2 years earlier. And they were like, oh, let's do Titanic, but about Pearl Harbor. It's like, no, different thing.
Mm.
Different piece of history. And also, Titanic's happy to end on the tragic part, whereas they end it halfway through and they're like, now we're going to get them back. It's like, oh, no. Bad.
How good is Full Metal Jacket, though?
Fantastic. I haven't seen it in a really long time.
Top 20 films of all time, I reckon, for me.
Wow, I got to rewatch it. Well, that's
I got to rewrite my list of top 20, and we need to do a live or do something about our top 20 films, because I would be willing to bet that Full Metal Jacket's in there for me.
That's amazing. I need to rewatch it. That first hour. Actually, it's funny. Both of the films you've described are really rare in the fact that it's the first bit that's more memorable than the rest of it. Usually movies, it's the ending.
Yeah.
But there's something about those two war films. First 20 minutes of Saving... The whole of Saving Private Ryan is great. The whole of Full Metal Jacket is great. Yeah. But the first 20 minutes is like what is so game-changing.
Yeah, absolutely. And
then like, same with Full Metal Jacket. It's that first hour before they go to war. Like Vincent D'Onofrio is so good in that
film. Oh, my God. It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on, sorry.
I think, however, of all the films that the war films that I've watched over the last few weeks, Casualties of War had a cast that made me stand up. Well, not literally, but like I was like, oh my God, oh my God. Like I didn't look up this film, but there were so many little faces that popped up and they were so good.
Like it was a really good film, I think. Yeah. I really enjoyed the film. It was heavy.
That is a heavy film for what is a bunch of guys in their early 20s who are breaking into Hollywood. Like,
yeah.
Like Sean Penn in that film is fucked. Like, fucked scary. Like, fucked scary. Imagine being stuck in a lift with that cunt. Like, fucked scary.
I think there were moments that even then we probably were a little on the edge and now you look back and, like I said, better think pieces online about that. But considering it's Brian De Palma and considering how sometimes he treats subjects of a comparable, I thought it was horrific but very powerful and more tasteful than I was expecting. And the acting was really good. I thought it was a very affecting film. There were moments where I was literally standing. Like I was like... Mm. It really hit me. It was closer on the spectrum to your Full Metal Jackets and your Saving Private Ryans, and I wasn't expecting that.
It wasn't like a Pearl Harbor. You can't compare the two. In terms of the spectrum of Saving Private Ryan to Pearl Harbor, it's definitely hitting the Save It Private Ryan club.
But you know what? It could have been a Hacksaw Ridge, and I think it wasn't.
Hacksaw Ridge. art direction incredible. Like I thought it was beautifully shot. The violence was horrific and well fucked. I think Andrew Garfield, I think, is that him?
Yeah.
Great. Like very fucked, very good, right? It is a bit cheese, eh? Like it's a little bit like director trying to reinvent himself after some racial stuff. Scandals that might have happened and
that was
became
subtle,
this.
Mish. That was really thanks. Subtle.
And well then, but then became very kind of like, I've got to please the American market by doing this film. That's what it felt like to me. And also,
he falls into a big trap. He falls into a very big trap, I would say. He really, really struggled. All of his movies have good guys and bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the murkiness of war doesn't work with Mel Gibson because his films always have good guys and bad guys.
Yes.
They're good and they're bad. And, like, that's fucked in a story like that because, like, that's wrong. It's wrong to pretend one person is a good person and the other person is a bad person.
Yes.
Particularly with this story because the whole point is it's about nonviolence.
Well, yeah.
It's
and
a
that's
really
a
weird movie.
They made Vince Vaughn this, like, villain. And it's like, no, he's literally doing his job. Like
I love Vince Vaughn.
Do ya?
Yeah, I do. I do. I love him. He's got mad, doesn't give a shit, hasn't given a shit about any movie he's been in for like 20 years but still learns his lines.
Well, I think after energy. He did the remake of Psycho, he was probably like, well, fuck this.
I'm done.
Like, I'm done. I fucked up and I'm done. And any respect I had for cinema, I have literally washed down the shower drain. See what I did there? Did you see what I did there,
very
Zach? That
good.
Was a nice little pop
very,
culture
washed
reference.
Washed down
the shower drain.
Because of the... That's a weird movie. Yeah. I just want to say one
Why
thing
does
about
Anne
not
Hesh
casualties
remind me
war,
of you?
Of me?
Why does Anne Hesh... Why? Have you talked about her? Anne Hesh? Every time I think of Anne Hesh, I think of you.
That makes sense, though. I got Anne Hesh vibes.
Do you? Maybe you do have Anne Hesh vibes.
I'm the Anne Hesh to your Vince Vaughn.
I was thinking more you're like the Anne Hesh to my Harrison Ford in 6 days, 7 nights.
Not too bad. You're fapping and you're stabbing me. I just want to say one last thing on of all not the film we're talking about, which I thought was really powerful. And if you're up for it, it's horrifically full on. But if you're up for it, it is worth watching.
It's definitely worth watching.
I'm not saying I don't know. I only watched it half an hour ago, so I haven't processed it yet. And I haven't landed on my opinions on it, but it's worth watching. But what I was going to say was, what's the one with Mel Gibson with the we were just talking about?
Hacksaw Ridge.
Hacksaw Ridge is like the ultimate example of like, it doesn't matter what the characters are saying, the story is saying something else.
Yes.
It's kind of like the ultimate of, you know, in those older Disney movies where like, the man still saves the woman, but the woman goes, I can do it myself.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, but structurally, you're not, that's not the message. Just because you've got to rewrite in to have a woman say that doesn't mean this is the ultimate of that where it's like, oh, wow, nonviolence works. Anyway, we're off to kill all the baddies. Wow, this guy uses nonviolence? Yeah. How powerful.
Yeah.
All right, off you pop. Now we're going to shoot everyone. Like, isn't there that one bit where he's dragging Vince? I just
realized. Yes.
He's dragging Vince Vaughn. He's being nonviolent.
Yeah.
But Vince Vaughn's got a fucking machine gun or something. He's just killing everyone.
There's this part where, like, he has to get somewhere. But in order to get there, he needs to go and hide behind a tree. So he goes and hides behind a tree with a guy. So this guy, very quickly, this dude in Hacksaw Ridge has this, like, moral dilemma. Where he's like, I will not hold a gun at war. I'm anti-violence. So, yeah, he does the whole war without a gun. Anyway, in order for him to get somewhere, it would mean he'd have to get shot. So he goes up to this guy and is like, can you get him for me? Shoot that one. And so he does. And then this guy gets away without having to shoot anybody, but he just asked somebody to do it. We don't have much time.
Funny. No, no.
We should touch on a little bit about the baby legs, right? This is primo Baby Legs. This is Miami Vice Baby Legs. This is Baby Legs' first ever film.
Yes.
And I think he is so good in it.
He's fantastic. It's heartbreaking. His performance is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's really awful.
Really
awful.
Full on. What a role to get for your first film. You do a De Palma film, firstly. Well done, Johnny. Like, that's your first movie. But to get that kind of role, which is essentially is essentially a peer pressured 19-year-old
Yeah, we don't
boy.
Have to go into the what did you say?
He's a peer pressured 19-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Under a lot of stress, it's a heartbreaking performance.
It's. I think in so many ways, it's like it after Michael J. Fox. He's the one that really, like, I think as an audience member, you see it's really awful. It's a really beautiful, powerful, but very good performance.
My point is that if people – so we've got our Baby Legs fans. We've got our Sexy Luigi fans. We have our Dad Guzamo fans. If you are a Baby Legs fan, check out Casualties of War because he is phenomenal. He's full baby face, Baby Legs.
Don't watch the – I need to be very clear. Don't watch the film if you like Baby Legs and you want to keep – like, it's really upsetting.
No, I just mean that if you're a fan of his early work, that's fair,
yeah.
Right? Or like,
yeah.
If you're a fan of the trajectory of him, fucking watch it.
It's one of his best performances. It's really in there for, like, I can see why he told us to watch it, because he's I can see that he would be very proud of it. And it's like in there for, like, I almost think we should make a list of, like, ones that he's good in and he gets something good to do as an actor. And it's definitely in that category. 100%.
How many Leguistamos?
4.5.
I'm giving it 4.
Yeah, 4.5 Leguistamos. So upsetting, though. I have to say it again. Such a full-on movie.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you now, Mish. This is probably insane. What are you going to watch now? What are you going to watch? Something happy? You're going to watch something?
What am I watching tonight? Do you mean?
Mm.
My housemate and I are going to watch the series finale of Love Island. And then she goes to bed early, and my dog Stanley and I stay up and watch a scary film. And I saw one on Netflix that came out like yesterday or something like that. I've forgotten what it's called, but it's about a scary film.
It's fantastic.
And I'm going to watch that. Because, like,
cheesy horror
makes me happy.
This is not a scary film, cheesy horror, but can I give you a thriller, like full-on thriller recommendation?
Yep.
Green Room. Loved it. 10 out of 10.
Okay. I'll watch
That's just for you. That's not for the podcast. Hey,
As we're wrapping it up, just very quickly, Zach, how many Leguistamos do you give Hacksaw Ridge?
2.
Yeah, okay. I give
No, 1.5.
1.5 is the right answer.
Yeah.
1.5 Leguistamos for Hacksaw Ridge. Thank you so much, Zach, for joining me today for this podcast.
Thank you, Mish. Thank you so much. And Mish, go get your dog and say hello to your dog for me. I've had a great time chatting to you, and I've had a great time chatting to you, our listener. Thank you so much.
No problems.
Mish is, sorry, I should explain. Mish is after this podcast.
I have to go pick up my dog.
Rushing off to pick up her dog. That sounds, I realize there's no context.
Go get
for that.
Your dog sounds like some sort of, like.
The reason we're wrapping up the podcast is A, to end it, because you have to end podcasts eventually, I've been told by, like, disgruntled listeners, and B, so Mish can go pick up her dog. So, Mish, say hi to your dog for me, listener.
Hashtag hello Stanley. That's what I want. I want a hashtag hello Stanley message.
And as we say at the end of every one of our podcasts, we hope you have a legwa great day.
There were so many better things you could have said. A leg was awesome. A leg was outstanding day.
Mish.
Leg was a great day.
Mish, you got to pick up your dog.
All right, so bye.
We can brainstorm this next week.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.